and Ukraine goes on.
Blog Talk Radio.
The Biden administration is in discussions for the president to make the trip in the next few weeks.
Part of an effort to further engage with our allies and show solidarity with our NATO allies at this critical moment.
Sources say possible stops include Brussels, the headquarters of both NATO and the European Union. Nemily says top administration officials, including Vice President Harris, have visited numerous countries overseas lately in a show of support for Ukraine as it deals with a nearly three-week-long Russian invasion. Pfizer CEO says the pharmaceutical giant is working on a fourth dose of the COVID vaccine. Sarah Lee Kessler has more.
To make not only a vaccine that will protect against all variants, including Omicron, but also something that can protect for at least a year.
Albert Bourla told CBS's Face the Nation that the third dose protects against death and hospitalization, but not as strongly against infection.
Dr. Anthony Fauci says he hopes the world will remember the lessons learned from the catastrophic experience that was the coronavirus pandemic. This month marks 2 years since the start of the pandemic that has taken the lives of more than 6 million people around the world. Fauci said the world is headed in the right direction as cases and hospitalizations continue to decline. The doctor added, everybody wants to return to normal, which he said we should aspire to do. Most Senate Republicans are opposing talks over reviving the Iran nuclear deal. Now former President Trump pulled the U.S. out of the international accord during his tenure. In a letter to the White House, 49 Republican senators cite public reports and say a new deal would weaken sanctions and lessen restrictions on Iran's nuclear program. They argue the Biden administration appears to have given away the store. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
Do you owe the IRS $10,000 or more in back taxes? Are you being audited or investigated? Has the IRS sent you a letter demanding payment? You may not owe what they claim. Make this free call to the tax doctor now. Let them negotiate with the IRS on your behalf. Call 800-281-7048. 800-281-7048. That's 800-281-7048.
And let's go ahead and take a look now, Charles, better to talk weather. Outlook for Monday, well, we'll see pretty much a cloudy and rainy day today. High temperatures on 48, 49 degrees. Also have a little bit of wind out of the south at 10 to 15 miles per hour, gusting up to 20 in selected areas, so be on the lookout for that. Tonight, clouds and rain will hang around. Low temperatures down a few degrees at about 44. For Tuesday and the rest of the week, more clouds and rain at times. Pretty much the wet week continues. High temperatures in the low to mid-50s and low temperatures in the low 40s.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Welcome to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore living the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knutson, and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Are your thoughts keeping you small? Are you ready to get big? I will offer you ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. Explore what is keeping you small and how to shift your behaviors in order to get big.
Do your ADHD tendencies get in the way of you doing what you intend to? Traditional strategies for getting things done may not work for you. You need solutions tailored for your unique brain. In Bonnie Minku's training membership program, Productivity Pathfinder, learn ADHD self-mastery step-by-step at your own pace in a supportive community with live online options each week. Learn more about Productivity Pathfinder at thrivewithadd.com.
Day-to-day living can be difficult in our world today. Most of us don't know how to live a peaceful, joy-filled existence. Learn how to break through these barriers and live a transformative life on Love and Light with me, Dr. Lisa. Every day living in peace. Every second and fourth Wednesday at 1 p.m. Pacific, 4 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. To work with Dr. Lisa, visit EducationThroughEngagement.com.
Are you passionate about impacting social change or working towards anti-racism as a society? Are you willing to deconstruct your innermost thoughts, ideas, and beliefs about racism? Then Inflection Point Podcast, Cultivating Change from the Inside Out, is the show for you. Join Anita Russell, Mavis Bauman, and Gail Hunter in open, honest, and deliberate conversations every first and third Wednesday at 3 p.m. Pacific, 6 p.m. Eastern, only on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore living the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knutson, and Dr. Pat on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Are your thoughts keeping you small? Are you ready to get big? I will offer you ideas to transform what you are thinking into conscious action. Explore what is keeping you small and how to shift your behaviors in order to get big. Learn what is possible for you. Get ready to get big and live life out loud starting now.
Hey, everybody, welcome. I'm opening this up for my buddy, my friend, my colleague. Take this ride, this beautiful ride of life with. I get to do this show with her. I do. I'm so happy that I do. Get Big Out Loud. It's Carrie. Carrie Knutson does this show. It is off the charts. I actually think that what Carrie should do is go back to every episode we have done and create almost like a digital book from them. They're so educational. They're so informative, and they're so fun. I was actually went back because we're doing some upgrades to our YouTube, and I'm looking at all the shows that people have done, and out of all the shows I've done, there are a couple that float to the top where I'm smiling most of the time, and then we're laughing about some ridiculous benign thing that has nothing to do with the episode per se. But this is what I love. It is a more than powerful conversation. Today, it's about building resilience during difficult times. I'm so looking forward to this show with Carrie because one of the things that, you know, we do is we do have fun. But we also look at ourselves, and we kind of have a little fun at ourselves sometimes. I know today I got a little fun things about myself, you know, that I got to talk about. But we've got a great show. This is for you all out there is more than just more than the show. And you're going to be really cool when you hear when she gets back out there and does her one-woman show, right? When she is a speaker, Get Big Out Loud. You know, she is somebody that's consulting. She's counseling. She lives what she talks about, but she's also an emotional intelligence expert. And what that means is what we need now. It's known as EQ. And during the acceptance speech last night at the Critics' Choice Awards, Betty, I don't know if you can get Halle Berry's acceptance speech that we can play during the break. But Halle Berry and her acceptance speech for something we're going to talk about in another show, but her acceptance speech for being out there for saying, see me, she literally could have been calling Carrie Knutson out when she talked about women need to have the emotional intelligence. She said those two words. Emotional intelligence, and I bet half of them didn't know what she was talking about. But we do because we're taking the ride today, Carrie. Great to have you. Like, this is your show. But, man, I was thinking of you last night when I was watching Halle Berry, just an exquisite acceptance speech for her award. And blah, 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 blah. We need to do this. This is what we do. And women have emotional intelligence. And I thought, oh, okay. Carrie Knutson.
Oh, I love it. I'll have to look it up. It's great. EQ's getting mainstream attention. That's awesome. Thanks, Halle Berry.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, but today, let's talk about this here because I love the topic of building resilience. And what I love about it is a lot of times we get so far down a couple of courts that we don't even know we've tapped into our resilience quotient. And can you talk about what resilience means from your perspective? And then you're going to share some ideas with us, yeah?
Yes, definitely. Yeah, today's all about building resilience in difficult times because it feels like there's a lot of difficult things going on right now, globally, locally, nationally, personally. There's just a lot, and I felt like this month we should talk about building resilience to help get us through those difficult times. And resilience, like you said, what is resilience? It is simply your capacity to recover from difficulties. And it's not your capacity to recover quickly. It's not your capacity to recover in the same way as someone else or in the same timeline or in an exact certain way. It is your innate capacity that you build because we're all individuals and we're all unique. And sometimes you go through life and something that you see someone else struggle with, you don't struggle with as much. And something else you see someone just go through. You're like, why am I still struggling with this, right? So you cannot compare yourself when building your resilience. Also, resilience is a trait that you can, everyone has resilience, and you can learn about it, grow it, cultivate it. So it's not like luck of the draw, I guess I didn't get any resilience, right? It's everybody has the capacity. And so you can learn about it and cultivate it. And the idea is, can you build your capacity? First through your thoughts, and then in your behaviors and your actions, can you build that capacity? And that's really what resilience is. And who doesn't need more of that right now, right? How do we do that when we're faced with so much? So that's what resilience is. And today we're going to talk about some ideas for building that capacity and some like really tangible tools that you could use today to start thinking about that.
And, you know, I mean, a lot of times, Carrie, can we talk about something that I think is a misconception but is really important? A lot of times, I want to break apart building resilience and during difficult times. One of the hardest things for us to recognize today is that there has been, I'm getting a little choked up, I haven't even said it yet. There has been a process that has been going on. And I listen to a lot of spiritual things, but I listen to a couple of really, you know, positive spiritual people. One of them is a husband and wife team, and he's like, he's never wavered. You know, they shut his, like, gigantic, like, he does his deal in, like, the compact center in Houston, right? Like a football place, or right? And when you listen to somebody shut down, like the doors, and you listen to people never waver, here's the thing I want to ask you about, because self-awareness is something you teach people. Just because people go away, just because certain things stop, just because people come and go, and there's been a lot of people going, and I don't mean in depth, of course death, and I got to take a moment. I don't even know what to say about Ukraine anymore. You want to talk about difficult times, and you want to talk about resilience? Wow. Wow. We did a show last week on the women of the Ukraine. But sometimes when things leave, we see it as not good. But the doors are opening up for us to bring something else. What is your experience to what the greatest things we should know about building resilience? What should we know? What are your top ideas?
Well, the first one is the idea about self-awareness is the cornerstone for anything. And like the idea of wisdom, how we know ourselves and how we become self-aware, it's not just like saying, I want to be aware. It creates it has some intentionality and some consciousness to what you're doing. And what happens is in the face of trying to build our capacity to manage things, sometimes what we do is we're so much on autopilot that we don't think about what input is coming in and how it's affecting us. So specifically, like when you think about the news, and right now, it's when you look at the Ukraine, and I feel like you could see the war on your phone, on your tablet, on your computer, on your TV. You can get updates by the minute. It is right here, and it's so devastating to see that, and it's heartbreaking. Yeah. And so if you are constantly checking and looking at the news, you don't realize what happens is you're triggering your brain for that anxiety state and the what's next state and am I safe state and also I'm so sad state. It's all those triggers that happen to us, and our brain kind of gets hooked on those things. So we get hooked on feeling anxious all the time. We get hooked on being overwhelmed. We get hooked on feeling depressed about it. And while it still exists in that place, you have to say to yourself, this is true. And at the same time, how much can I take in at any given time? And is me setting some boundaries around my self-awareness actually going to be helpful for me to build my capacity to be resilient? Do I need to be triggered all day long and hooked to those feelings? Or if I use my self-awareness to say, I really want to be informed about what's going on. So I'm going to make a conscious decision when and how I check the news and how and be in a headspace to do that in a way that isn't constant. And just because we have access to constant news and information doesn't mean we should take that access. And that's a huge thing for people right now as part of building your self-awareness. That it's really important to build resiliency, because being on autopilot, being constantly triggered, and it's almost as like the phone is there, so you check it, and the feed is there, and there's always something new. And it's that little hit that your brain gets of like, what's new? What did I miss? What's happening now? And you have to be able to limit that access, because your brain just cannot handle it. And so that's a part of a conscious way of thinking. How am I taking in my news or social media information? When am I doing that? A lot of times, too, it's hard to build resilience when you're exhausted. And just feeling tired is this. It's, and people can take it for granted, but have you ever had, like, been going through something tough and then you finally get a good night's sleep and you wake up and you're like, okay.
Yeah.
All right, I can handle this.
Sleep is huge
in terms of that. And if you're going to bed at night and you're watching the news or scrolling into the last minute, your eyes are closed and your brain's still processing that, or you're not sleeping well, or thinking about, okay, what's my sleep routine?
Yeah.
How do I prepare my brain to shut down at night and process things? So that's a huge thing, too. How do you sleep and let yourself do that without, again, having the triggers from the day go with you into the night?
It's so interesting we're talking about this, because I just went through this experience myself over the weekend. And, you know, I don't think about what you just said, and I need to.
Well, there it is.
Oh, there's no mistake. No mistake. But, you know, I knew we were doing this show, and I must have subconsciously really done some reprogramming for myself. You know, I went out and I was playing on Saturday, and I usually, I'm good to go for like 6 hours. I really am. And I couldn't. And I don't know if it was the reaction to playing without the mask, because that was a thing here in our state. We got like the masks removed.
Mm-hmm.
You don't have to, but that thing happened.
Mm-hmm.
But I found myself like Howard's 85. And it's like 1 o'clock, and Howard says to me, hey, do you want to play? And I'm like, no. I'm like exhausted. No. So it was an indicator to me of all those things you just said. Now, we have to figure out, which is it? Is it the news? Is it something that weighs heavy on us? Is it what we're taking in food-wise? Gave us a blueprint that if we did nothing else but those three things, we can make a major shift, right? Major.
Yes. Major, especially if it's just engaging your conscious mind to think a little differently. Again, not with judgment, like, can't believe I did this or whatever. Because that's what we go to. We get judgy about ourselves, or we kind of like our habits take over our thoughtfulness. And part of it is just looking at yourself with curiosity and compassion and saying, like, what would it be like if I tried this? I'm curious what this would look like. I wonder if I put some limits on myself, or set up, like, I'm going to check the news at this time and this time, or my sleep schedule is going to look like this, or I'm going to actively process my emotions instead of taking things in and then having nowhere to go with it. I'm going to figure out how to process them. And that's another thing I want to talk about, is that kind of next step. But for the first level, it's just bringing consciousness to your how you're living your life, how you're taking in information. When you feel tired, and you don't have the capacity. You could feel physically tired. You could feel mentally or emotionally tired. Right? You can feel like it's just too much. So, and all, this is what I also say about this. A lot of times we feel like our suffering will somehow lead to better outcomes, either for us or other people. Like, if we suffer enough, something good will come of it. Like, we'll get an award or parade, or someone will see how much we're suffering, or whatever it's going to be. And the truth is, your suffering does not lead to better outcomes for you or anyone else. So the idea of, well, if other people are suffering, then I have to suffer. I can't be happy because, or like, we can do comparative suffering. Whose suffering is worse? I should be so grateful. I have this and that. Like, we diminish what is true for us. And again, that's just bringing some consciousness to that. Why am I diminishing my own struggles? Why am I diminishing what is true for me? Why do I think that suffering is somehow going to be rewarded? I'm curious about that.
Yeah.
Like, just start to noodle on that rather than just criticize yourself or somehow, you know, wrong yourself. That's a great starting point. It's an access point. Curiosity is the best access point for awareness. As long as the judgment piece stays far, far away,
yeah,
that's a good start.
Well, it was what really helped me because I prepare for these shows and I was looking over the outline and I really caught myself in this cultivating self-awareness part that you talk about. And, you know, going on and looked at the thoughts, the beliefs, and the actions. And then the light bulb went on. And it was like, oh, my gosh, Pat, when was your last B12 shot, right?
Mm.
Because I know that, you know, figuring out weekly now that you're back exercising. So I gave myself, I have B12. I give myself B12 shots. My naturopath is like, you got to take B12 shots. My nutritionist is like, you got to take B12 shots. And then I don't take them. And so it was interesting to find the cycle this weekend was to take a look at what can I do physically. But then we come to the part that you're the master at. And that is identifying and processing feelings.
Mm-hmm.
Who was it? My buddy, Don Miguel. I love Don Miguel. I've interviewed him a million times, and every time I interview him, I said, you know, I'm still working on this one here, this one where you say the four agreements, this one number, what it, don't take anything personally, that one. I'm working
hard. It's so hard.
Right? Right? Because to take it personally, you can see the power of that agreement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the others are not easy either, but I'm just saying. I pretty much be impeccable with your word. I'd really come close to that one. But to don't take anything, Don Miguel, come on. Like anything personally? Like really? Someone says they don't like your hair or...
Oh, everything. And
I can go through the list today. Or like you own a network and you own a business, right? And mm-hmm. you're working through, you know, what the solutions are, where to go. We take losing a host very personally. And it's not even that. We know our intention is to bring excellent people through here. But most of them then rise up and then they move on. They get television gigs. They get this gig. They get jobs at centers and all of that. But it's like, oh, my heart hurts. How do we get around that identifying processing feelings? Because my mom used to say, I'm sorry, I got to say it. Can I say this and then you can correct me?
Sure.
My mama used to say, girls, I got to tell you, it's from the South. She said, I'm going to tell you, girls, you know, I'm going to tell you a little bit about feelings. And it was at the time that feeling song came out, I think. I don't even know. But she used to look at those girls and she'd say, girls, feelings turn to fat. What? And for years, we didn't know what she was saying because her southern drawl was, you know, we thought maybe she was saying, like, feelings are all that, right? And then later on, after my dad passed, she was saying feelings turn to fat. And I said to her, Mom, why did you say that?
What did she say?
She said, I got to paraphrase because I don't have her. I don't have the power of her tongue. I mean, you had to hear her.
Mm-hmm.
But she said, look, when you hold on to a feeling and you hold on to it and you hold on to it and you hold on to it, before you know it, you're not holding on to it anymore. It's holding on to you. You know, and she said, my mama, your grandmama used to say feelings turn to fat. And if you're from the South, it's not always a bad thing. But what she was saying is the idea of holding on to feelings and not letting them pass through with processing or understanding them, they turn into things we don't want, right?
Mm-hmm.
Now, you had to know that my stepmom cooked everything with fat. There was a Crisco can of everything that was ever fried that goes in that can that you use over. But what she was saying was, I had my first child at 12, your sister, my second child at 13. She said, could you imagine my life would have been like if I'd have held on to all the grief and story behind that? I wouldn't have met your dad. I wouldn't have met you. And she would talk about that. And yet, feelings can be healthy, can't they? So let's talk about feelings as healthy, when they healthy, and when they not healthy.
Exactly. Well, you're talking about the idea with how we process feelings is so vital, because feelings get such a bad rap in our society. We're not supposed to have them, really. We're supposed to be good, fine, or okay, or busy. Those are the kind of the level that we're allowed to have. And if you do express yourself, like let's say you're a person that cries or gets angry or frustrated, you're supposed to keep that back because we're trying to find a good socially acceptable way of expressing ourselves. But it's kind of just become very neutral. And what I find is that if you have a feeling and then you don't express it, it does block things up. You do get stressed. And feelings, to me, I call it like holding water. You cannot hold water for very long in the same way. And if you think about how feelings are supposed to come and go, they're simply indicators of our internal compass. Like, did something happen that was frustrating? Oh, I'm frustrated. Did something happen that was sad? Oh, I'm feeling sad. It's like, oh, I'm working. Did something happen that was joyful and I feel joyful? Great. Like, your internal compass is working when you have those feelings. But what happens is a lot of times we shut it down because I shouldn't feel this way. This is a scary feeling or a bad feeling. Or we really limit ourselves. So we say, I'm mad. I'm just mad. But really, you're infuriated. You're overwhelmed. You're frustrated. You're rageful, whatever. Like, we need to find some better words to actually describe bad, sad, mad, busy, happy. Like, that's really limiting to the scope of what we feel. And sometimes if you really search, what do I actually feel? Am I more overwhelmed or frustrated? That's different than mad, right? And if I'm sad, am I feeling just heartbroken? Is it just heartbreaking? Or is it more melancholy? Or is it bittersweet? Is it that kind of sadness? Or is it feeling of exasperation, like I just don't know what to do now, right?
Yeah.
And so when you can put really tangible words to the feeling, it helps so much because your body, it almost recognizes, like, that's how I feel. And I just want to give you a quick example of something.
Yeah, please.
So two things that recently happened. One, I was talking to my daughter, and I said, Claire, why are you so angry right now? She's angry at me. She goes, Mom, I'm not angry. I'm frustrated. No, I'm jealous. That's what she said. And it was funny for the moment because she's like, I'm not angry. I'm frustrated. No, actually, jealous. And it was so interesting because when she said jealous, I said, oh, talk to me about jealous. And so I'm saying, don't be jealous of your sister. Don't do this. Because sometimes when people say that, the first thing we say is, don't be that way.
Yeah.
Don't do that. You shouldn't feel that way. And what that, again, does, it just diminishes the person because we know how we feel. It's like someone saying when you're upset, if someone says, oh, just calm down. Just calm down. You're overreacting. In the history of time, no one has said, oh, thank you.
Yeah.
It really helps me reflect. I'll just calm down. You know what it does? It just amps people up because don't you dare tell me how I feel. Right? Don't you tell me to calm down.
Yeah.
Right? So we have that push-pull of our feelings. And so my daughter said that was a big deal. And then I was talking to a friend of mine, and I said, I just feel sad about what happened. This was with a mutual friend of ours. And she said, it sounds like you're actually more disappointed. It's not how you thought it was going to be. And I'm like, oh, that's it. That's it. I'm actually disappointed. And then that helped me reframe. And then I could work through the feelings. And then it was, but getting the word can be so helpful to letting your mind and body know, oh, that's how I feel. Without judgment or criticism of I should or shouldn't feel this way, or I'm overreacting, or I'm being too emotional, all the things we tend to say to people to minimize it. Because what happens is then we block the flow and then we put it somewhere. And a lot of times we put our emotions right in our bodies. So when you feel
that's what my mama was saying, though.
Yes, that you just explained.
I couldn't get it out what she was saying. But that is what she was saying when she said feelings are facts. You know what she was saying very scientifically, not knowing you. She was saying, like, you know how you could eat some stuff and they just turn into facts, no matter what you do. But you're right. We now know that my mama was pretty smart. And like my grandmama, like with her outhouse and the whole potbelly stove, grandmama, what they were saying, it sticks to you. And after time, you become it. You know, there's so much we learn. I want to talk to you about this when we come back, because it's the next part of what you do and what you're teaching us today. And, you know, it is when you identify those feelings, those processes, then how do we move beyond that? And how do we then take meaningful action? Because even like a B12 shot that I took like yesterday, woke up, got a great night's sleep, woke up this morning, and there are some other changes. But Carrie's going to take us through how do we go through those things? How do we hold things in our consciousness? How do we work through what most people might call a disappointment, might call a loss? And I got to tell you, I have done a show a couple times now, maybe not in this time spot, talking about my life a little bit. Mm-hmm. And when I talk about it, I share about a little airplane story, like a being on a plane with, you know, people. And mm-hmm. I always ask you, like, what do you do? Where are you from? And you start to talk. And I remember saying to one guy when he asked me a question, and I just said, yeah, you know, I had a rough life, but I'm living great now. And he said, well, what's rough to you? And I remember out of my mouth was, well, I was born a little bit off. Some people call it spectrum. I cried for 2.5 years because nobody could figure it out back then. I was sent to Catholic boarding school at a very young age and got beat every night. My mom commits suicide when I'm there. I'm homeless at 17. And, 19, I get arrested for something I didn't do. And I said, you know what? I'll tell you, I wouldn't trade any of that because I learned so much about it. I said, you know, when you're homeless and you have to fend for yourself, boy, you learn a lot about responsibility. And I was like upbeat about it. And the guy looked at me and said, that story can't be true. Now, I had to sit on the plane with this guy for 6 hours. Hello. I looked to change my seat. And he said, and I looked at him and I said, what do you mean? He said, I've never met anybody that could talk about five things like that in life and be smiling about it. Let's take a short break. When we come back, what does it take from feeling, processing, anything you've gone through in these past 2.5, 3 years now? What will Carrie help us with to get from all of that, one, witnessing and acknowledging it, to maybe looking at it and looking for the blessings in it? And my heart goes out to you if you've lost someone. We all have. Myself over the holiday. But when we come back, it's a new day. It's a new capital R for resilience. And Carrie Knutson is in the house. We'll be right back.
In that someday attitude, living the same day over and over again with no action? The Becoming You Show, big ideas that inspire, impact, and influence your life with Leah Rowling is for you. Tune in every Friday at 11 a.m. Central on TransformationTalkRadio.com. This show will have you feeling inspired to take action with purpose and intention. For more information and to get in touch with me, visit www.leahrowling.com.
Have you been a life roller coaster trying to figure out what to do next? Then join Greta, Lee, Yvonne, and the Realm of Being each Friday at 8 a.m. Pacific, 11 a.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Take the dust off your wings and fly to the highest heights in your thoughts and actions. Express your greatness. Be a champion for yourself, and we'll see you there on Shifting Impressions Conversations with the Realm of Being.
Everybody, it's me, psychic medium Jamie,
and me, spirit walker Nicole. We are so excited to introduce you to our new live call-in show called Shades of Spirit on TransformationTalkRadio.com. As we connect you with your crossover loved ones, angels, and guides, and also help you develop your own psychic and healing abilities. For more information and to book your own private experience, go to ShadesOfSpirit.com and also follow us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
The truth is funny. Shift happens with monthly guest host Karen Bettner. Tune in for powerful conversations about health and wellness, Karen brings unique insights rich with humor and science to her discussions with experts in medicine, movement, psychology, spirituality, and so much more. Don't miss Karen on The Truth Is Funny every third Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. For more information about Karen, visit KarenButton.com.
Have you known that you're on a soul path, but often wondered why you don't have the insight of how to go from here to there, or whether or not what you're doing is going to take you to where you want to go in your soul's journey? Damayante is the show for your soul. Damayante speaks to your soul, connects with your soul, and shines a light for your soul. Damayante, the show for your soul with Sarah Main, brings you insights and a pathway to your soul's journey on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Hi, I'm Coach Marte.
And I'm licensed therapist Adrenalation.
We want to invite you to join us on the Coach Marte and Adrenalation Show, where we discuss understanding love, accepting truth, and changing your perspective.
Relationships are the currency to life, and so many couples find themselves broke in their relationships. We want you to join us for a lively discussion and practical tips and insights on how to turn things around and gain the merit for life mindset.
Carrie Knutson, we're having so much fun, and yet this is one of the most powerful conversations we can have. You know, in my preparation for today, I've already made some changes over the weekend. Because they're important to be reminded. As many tools as I have and as many people I'm in front of, Carrie, I need to, like, be in front of you and look at where your passion, purpose is and what you're doing to help people. And just by prepping for this show, I stopped three things and I started three. And it was important for me to recognize that, right? One of them was straightening out my house. Okay, now I'm not pig pen, but when I'm alone, I mean, I could tend to leave, like, clothes on the floor. I'll take your confessions. Okay. But when Linda comes, that doesn't happen. But before we go on, how do people find out about you? How do they work with you? You are a coach, fantastic coach. They can work with you on everything we're talking about today, and especially emotional intelligence. Halle Berry, thank you.
Right, Halle Berry, living the new queen. Yeah, so you can find anything you want about me at KnutsonSpeaks.com. It's K-N-U-T-S-O-N Speaks.com, and I do presentations. That's a bulk of my work. Then I also do coaching for people who want to focus their work. Eventually, hopefully this spring or summer, I'll have my one-woman show.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so everything I do, though, is about taking psychology, what I say, off the couch and bringing it to people in useful, tangible, applied ways with no psycho jargon, babble, anything that would be like, what's that theory? Or I don't understand that. I want it to be really accessible to people, because you don't have to necessarily go to see a therapist to benefit from psychology. And there's a lot of ways that we shift our thinking that can be very, very powerful. So that's my mission, to help bring psychology to the people.
Yeah. And, you know, we've been doing it in all of these shows. And that's why I said, when you go back and you listen to them, or you go back and you watch the shows, they're really fascinating and interesting. But, you know, there are things that feel right now so intense. Let's just take a moment. You know, they feel so intense. They, you know, COVID felt intense, right? You know, things felt intense. And, you know, I was listening to something or watching something. I can't remember which. And you can't help but your heart go out for the people in Ukraine.
Oh,
you just can't. And you can get involved. There are ways you can donate, right? There are things you can do. But there's a difference between that and taking it all in and becoming completely overwhelmed, right?
Mm-hmm.
So tell me about this and what happens when we do take this in and we watch the devastation.
Sure. Well, we can think about what we just talked about. So when you think about, okay, I'm watching, let's say, use the war in Ukraine, for example. That information is coming at us, and we have access to it all day long, right? So then we have those triggers and those feelings because of it. then the next idea is to say, okay, what kind of boundary am I putting on when I access that information? It doesn't mean those feelings aren't there. It means how am I going to have a boundary about when and how I consume information that I can manage. Then you have the feelings that come up because of it, and you're not denying those or negating those or judging those. A lot of times, too, we'll see someone else in a situation and we'll be like, oh, my God, what if that was me? What would I do? What would I? And we, like, overly identify in that way, and it makes me personalize it so much because we care. We have empathy for people. But sometimes what we also have to do is say, like, I even work with people and say, I am safe right now. I am safe. I'm okay. Like, to know that, like, I'm not the person going through that, even though I can have empathy for someone else, we over-personalize that. Or we feel like we shouldn't, I can't be happy in my life because someone else is suffering, right? And that is also a push-pull when we think, I am my own individual person, experience my life in this time and space. So in order to really do something with what I have to have really good boundaries and good emotional processing so that I can go out in the world and do the third part, which is take action and take meaningful action. And the idea of once I have some awareness on my thought processes, I know what I'm feeling and I can express it accurately. And I want to just add one thing with that. There's a lot of things you can look up, like Plunchnik Wheel of Emotion and Emotion Wheel and whatever. There's so many things out there. Brené Brown has a thing. There's other things that you can look up. So if you're looking for, well, I need some more words, there's plenty of things you can look at online. But once you identify those feelings, then the third part of the action piece is really important, because a lot of times we think, oh, I have to take action towards the thing that's upsetting me. For example, a lot of us say, all right, I want to donate money to people in Ukraine, and I want to, there's people getting Airbnbs and not going there, but sending money to people, like renting an Airbnb in the Ukraine and then not going just so the money gets there. There's people donating to organizations. There's so many things you could do to take action that way. Sometimes, though, it's hard when we take action to, like, now what? Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I did that, and it's out somewhere that it's not tangible. So I also encourage thinking about taking action towards something meaningful in your own life. And I want to give a quick example of what this could look like so it has some meaning for you. But I was feeling the devastation of Ukraine, just all the feelings of overwhelm and all just the helplessness, frustration, sadness, why. We just almost got through 2 years of COVID as a world, and now this, like, come on, like, just feeling awful, and then seeing it, and it was all overwhelming. And I had this urge in me to take action. So, of course, I looked up, and I donated, and I felt like, okay, I could do that. But then I was like, wait, I need to take action on something in my own life that I can actually control and see the outcome of.
Yeah.
And so I had this idea that one of my daughters is in fourth grade, and her teacher needed some reading books, like 10 copies of each. They wanted something. They were asking for paired donations. I'm like, you know what? I'm going to make those books happen. And I called the bookstore, and I'm like, how much is the total for all these books? And then I emailed all the parents. And I said, I'm doing a one-day donation drive to get these books. And I'm going to go pick them up, and I'm going to deliver them because some kids are going to have books. Because I thought to myself, I need to see something good in the world that I can manage and make happen. I'm going to take action, because those aren't, I can't necessarily directly affect the kids in the Ukraine, but somebody, I can affect somebody's kids.
Yeah, yeah, somebody's exactly. There.
So that action really emboldened me to feel like I had some control. And I think that's an element that a lot of us seek when we have these feelings of overwhelm, and we're having a hard time being resilient because it's hard to feel like, well, what do I actually have control over when the world is out of control?
You know, I'm so glad you said that, because one of the cornerstones of building resilience is to recognize that we are not totally powerless. You see, powerless and helpless, they are the antithesis of resilience, right? And I don't mean situations where you are really, you know, you and I, we talk about our buddy Viktor Frankl ad nauseum sometimes, because this is a man that really was powerless and helpless over his environment. But even so, he made the best of it. He wasn't powerless over his mind or his attitude, and that's what, you know, he really focused on.
Well, one of his best quotes was, decisions not conditions, right?
Exactly.
Yes, decisions. And that's exactly decisions around what you can control, what you can't, how you're going to take meaningful action through engaging your conscious mind. Also not negating how you feel, so you, then you're not stuck. When you identify how you feel, then you can move through that feeling on to the next one. Because, again, it's really that idea of all these things working together, and we tend to get stuck in one, two, or three. Like, we get stuck somewhere, we can't, what I call, like, complete the cycle. And we're having very human responses to things every day. And the thing is, when we do this comparative, well, at least I'm not this or this and that, we lose the beauty of our own stories. Because
yeah.
We've all gone through things that are beautiful and amazing and things that are horrible, hard, and awful. And those things make up who we are. And it's how the idea of why I love resilience so much is you have the capacity to recover from those difficulties. If you actively choose to engage your self-awareness, process your feeling, and then take action in a meaningful way that lets you know I do have control over something.
Mm-hmm.
Decisions, not conditions, determine your path. And that is, to me, so powerful, so that wherever you are, and whatever you're dealing with at whatever stage, there's hope. And the biggest thing we lose is hope. And that is the detriment to most of us. Not the actual circumstances, but when we lose hope for what's possible, our own efficacy, or in our ability to think, do I have the capacity to build resilience? Yes, you do.
You know, it's interesting you're talking about that. I was talking to a friend of mine over the weekend, and we were just chit-chatting about, you know, pop culture movies, kids. She wants me to talk to her children because she says, you relate to them. But you relate to the Marvel universe. I don't. Can you talk to my kids? And I said, okay, like, are we talking about comic books or do you want me to talk about, like, what? What do you want me to talk about? But we were chit-chatting a little bit, and a name that keeps coming up in Hollywood, and I asked myself why. When somebody is so revered for their integrity and their humility and their talent, and it comes up as sidebars in other conversations, you really stop. And Scarlett Johansson was talking about the fact that she wasn't the first candidate for Black Widow. And she went on to talk about how unworthy she felt, implying that the woman that was first selected was so outstanding, right? So, right? She had to really step into her talent. You know, she knew she wasn't first choice. She didn't know if she'd be good enough at that.
Mm-hmm.
But the name that comes up that we don't hear about, we don't see her out there doing big speeches, but her name in the industry is said over and over and I love working with her. She helped me enormously. Emily Blunt. And when you hear it over and over, whether it's The Rock says it, Scarlett Johansson says it, or somebody else said it in one of the awards. You have to ask yourself, what is she made of, right? You know, because when we hear about Hollywood, how often do we really hear people raise other people up? And I think in this context, we have to remember to raise ourselves up, and it's okay to raise others up around us. I need to get back to what you said. Just because I raise Carrie up, it doesn't mean that I'm making a comparison. We can raise each other up. We can raise ourselves up. That is critical to resilience, in my opinion. I don't know. What's your thought?
No, I love that idea, because the idea of raising people up becomes, though, from a sense of worthiness. Like, and that is a huge thing. Well, two things, belief in ourselves and what's possible, and then worthiness. And even saying, I am worthy. I am worthy of figuring this out. I am worthy of compassion for how I am in this place right now. I'm worthy of love. I am worthy of some vulnerability to ask for help or get what I need. And also, when you're in a place you can help, it's so interesting to remember those times when people lifted you up to feel like, look, I'm in a place now where I can. And
yeah.
I think sometimes in my life, when I need to, when I'm called to step into a situation or to do something, I always think I'm so grateful. And I say this to my husband, like, I'm so grateful that I have the foundation at home that allows me to step up in this way, because I'm not just barely keeping it together. You know, they're trying to do everything. Like, I have a sense of who I am and where I come from, and I think about my parents and what they gave me. And but my tangible things in my life now, too, would be like, I'm worthy of all this good things, and I want to then take what I have and then share and give and lift up to others and help them build their own resilience in whatever way I can. And that's the part around taking action for the things you can control, right? I can help. I often think about this. One time, so my mom and dad used to play in different nursing homes. My dad's a pianist, and my mom wanted to be a singer. She tried. And I said, does it ever make you miss your own parents when you go there? Do you miss, because, you know, they're not here in Colorado. They're in Wisconsin and Ohio. And my dad says, well, that's someone's parent. That's someone's parent right there. Like, I miss my parents, but I'm serving someone else's parent right there. Mm-hmm. And that's like when I thought about, I can't help all the kids in the Ukraine right now, but I can help these kids, right? And I can't help everybody, but I can help this person. And I can't show up every day ready to engage, but I can jump today, so I might as well do it 100% because I can do it, so I should in this moment, right? And that's taking the opportunity to really step in to what's possible for us, recognizing that it doesn't have to be perfect to be really, really good, and you don't have to be perfect to be good, and also the idea of you better be fine, good, happy, okay, or busy, and if you have anything else, something's wrong with you. I'd rather say, like, look at how complex you are. Look at all the things you can feel and process in a day, and look at in the scope of your life. Like you were saying, Dr. Pat, something that's tragic in this moment, you can actually laugh about over here. With time, distance, perspective, safety, processing, understanding, you can say, yep, that's my life, and it's okay, and I'm not, and I need to embellish it or dramatize it, just what is, and I'm okay, and here's how I got there, right? So I think your story is beautiful, and I too, because you can see the journey part of it.
Yeah, and I love it. I mean, you think about this. I have a friend that got so infatuated in love with Julia Childs, right? You know, the chef, who brought a whole new perspective. And I said to her one day, a bunch of years ago, I said to her, because the movie had just come out, and I said, tell me about Julia, because both of us would watch the television show, just wouldn't miss any of it. And back then, you couldn't do on demand, right?
Uh-huh.
And I said, what was it for you about her? And here's what we both agreed. She said, you know, to look at her, you wouldn't know she was a phenomenal chef because she came across as a regular woman in the kitchen. And right?
Right.
And she said she was relatable. She really touched all of us that are here in the kitchens every day doing what we do, but begged us to step forward because we had the capacity to do more. And I think that's part of what we're talking about today for ourselves, like you're doing for the kids.
Mm-hmm.
Whether it's being there for them, which is, by the way, equally important. Because, see, we don't think kids are paying attention to the news. They are, right?
Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Definitely. And finding a way to help them. But you, again, this idea of suffering, you can't help other people when you're suffering. It's hard to show up for other people when you're suffering.
No.
It's hard to feel good when you're suffering or even have the capacity to build resilience when you're suffering. And so this whole idea of take care of yourself, think about you as the focal point of how can I be thinking consciously about what's going on with me? How can I set some good boundaries and some space and good self-care, bring up my worthiness? How can I name what's going on for me without judgment, criticism, or comparison? And then how can I go out and take action towards things that matter in my life, in the world, with other people, and bringing people up? And that, again, to me, is what you're saying is the cycle of how we get through life, right? And if we want to do it in a way that builds our resiliency, it's being conscious of that cycle and being conscious of those things. So like even you said, I know I should do this, but I don't. Because we get busy, we get overwhelmed,
yeah.
We get tired, right? All of us. And I talk about this stuff all the time, and I'm constantly thinking,
let's look at this part of my life, or what's going on here now, or am I dealing with something that's hard that my emotions are stagnant, and do I need to find a way to process them so I can do the next thing? It's a constant analysis, and I call it, you know, you're always arriving, and sometimes you look so far into the future that, oh, I haven't arrived yet, that you very rarely look back and say, like, holy cow, look how far I've come.
Yeah, I just had a moment like that. Yeah, I had a moment like that. I also had the moment where I recognized that there's a, you know, there's really a whole frontier in short term of a lot of things to do. But we don't take time to look back. We don't take time to acknowledge.
Mm-hmm.
You know, once upon a time I said, get yourself a bragging buddy. Get somebody that you talk to every day, and both of y'all get on a phone, and for 90 seconds straight, you got to brag about yourself, and then they brag about themselves. And it sounds easy, right?
It's not easy. What would you say?
90 seconds. You know, at first I gave them, like, I had 5 minutes, and they were like, no deep in way. Then I went to 3 minutes, then I cut it back to 90 seconds. This is what I do with my coaching clients, right? But I wish everybody would try that today, because it is resilient building. Brag on yourself. It doesn't matter what you brag on, right?
No, and it helps you see what you've done. Like, I think part of building resilience is, oh, look what I've done in the past. Look what I've overcome. It helps you feel that strength. It helps you feel like, oh, look what I did, especially in times when you didn't think you would overcome it. But if you do take the time to look back a bit and say, what did I have that allowed me to do that? What person got me to here today, right? And that idea, you can call it bragging, you can call it telling the truth. You can just call it being in a society that wants to diminish that, just being bold enough to say, I'm proud of myself for this. I'm doing enough. I'm enough. This is enough. Or I'm proud of this, regardless of if anyone's applauding you or not. Right? Sometimes I feel like, why don't I have a parade or a hot air balloon or like a topic? Like, what is it? But there's a lot of things that if you look in your life, like, I'm proud and it's enough that it's in here. It's enough.
And you know what? Ain't nothing stopping you and me from buying our own balloons. Hello. Right there. Terry, let's give out your website. Thank you so much for today. And then any last words for folks, please.
Sure. You can find me at KnutsonSpeaks.com or on any social media at KnutsonSpeaks. And I'm putting up some new exciting training programs and speaking things. I'm getting all started with that, which is exciting. And I feel like all of my topics have expanded from emotional intelligence to now 20 different topics because people have said, can you talk about this? How does it relate to this? Let's go deeper with this. So I'm doing a lot of compassion, fatigue, burnout, and stress, and connecting that to resiliency and thriving through change, a lot of change management, and then how do we build high-performing teams. So a lot of fun, exciting things in the works that I'm doing. And my closing message for today is a lot of times when we feel overwhelmed, then we just kind of feel overwhelmed and keep that. Sometimes it's good if you can take a step back and be like, I am overwhelmed about this situation. This thing feels scary. And at the same time, I do have control over this, and this. And I'm going to take care of myself today in this way because my suffering does not lead to better outcomes. And two things can be true at once. Like, I can take action to something that's out there, and I can take action to something here, and they're both meaningful. Right. And so thinking about those things and holding all these things at once is great. Because when you make big things like I am overwhelmed, it's easy to say, like, I feel overwhelmed in this moment or this situation is overwhelming me. But you don't have to take in, like you said, you don't have to like own those emotions. They're supposed to flow through you. So let them flow.
You have been listening to Get Big Out Loud Radio, where we explore the complex, funny, and beautiful ride of life with me, Carrie Knutson, joining Dr. Pat live every second Monday at 10 a.m. Pacific on TransformationTalkRadio.com. I will help you to know which thoughts are keeping you small in order for you to get big. Get big and live your life out loud. For more information, visit KnutsonSpeaks.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. Contests are the responsibility of the host of this program and not KKNW. This is Alternative Talk 1150 AM, KKNW Seattle, and KNUC 98.9 HD3 Seattle.
And good Monday to you. Matters here for a look at your alternative talk AM 1150 traffic update for around the south. Well, we have over an I-5 northbound near the off-ramp to North Lake Sandwich Way around Milepost 246. We've seen a disabled vehicle partially blocking the ramp. Good thing, though, DOT crews and State Patrol have been dispatched to the scene to take care of that disabled vehicle. Stay tuned. Coming up next, after the news and weather, it's another hour of the Dr. Pat Show being brought to you by the Transformation Talk Radio Network. This time, it's Tarot Priestesses, using the cards to heal, grow, and serve, with Lisa Robinson.
NBC News Radio, I'm Lisa Peeler. Gas prices are down slightly, but still remain at record highs. AAA's Mark Jenkins says gas prices are down 2 to 4 cents as crude oil prices drop.
Some really significant drops in the price of oil this morning. About 7% or about $8 per barrel is what the price is down to right now.
Jenkins says a new COVID lockdown in China may be leading to the decrease, but it's a fluid situation given all the uncertainty with the war in Ukraine. The price for regular fell a penny over the weekend to $4.32 a gallon. Gas is below $4 a gallon in only a dozen states. California gas is far and away the most expensive at $5.74 a gallon. Ukraine's president will address the U.S. Congress virtually on Wednesday morning. Illinois Democratic Representative Mike Quigley says every time President Zelensky speaks, he moves people, including him.
Make me rethink my very thoughts of, you know, why we are so quick to defend NATO under Article 5, but not a country that's actually living that out.
The announcement was made by House Speaker Nancy Pelosi and Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer. The joint statement said Congress remains unwavering in its commitment to supporting Ukraine during the ongoing Russian invasion. Pelosi and Schumer called it cruel and diabolical aggression. COVID-19 is suspending the kidnapping trial involving Michigan Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer. Court documents only say an essential trial participant has tested positive and the hope is to reconvene on Thursday. Brandon Caserta, Barry Croft Jr., Adam Fox, and Daniel Harris are charged with kidnapping conspiracy. Croft, Fox, and Harris face additional charges. One of President Biden's nominees for the Board of the Federal Reserve is in trouble. West Virginia Democrat Joe Manchin says he will oppose the nomination of Sarah Bloom Raskin. Manchin noted Raskin's previous public statements and said they have failed to address his concerns about an all-of-the-above energy policy to tackle the nation's energy needs. Democrats have no votes to spare in the 50-50 Senate, and Raskin is unlikely to get any Republican support. You're listening to the latest on NBC News Radio.
When you buy health products, you can save up to 50% at VitaminLife.com, the world's largest selection of supplements, herbs, homeopathic, health and beauty products, and more. Choose from VitaminLife.com's 30,000 products from over 700 brands, including Solaray, Jarrow Formulas, New Chapter, Country Life, Source Naturals, Nature's Way, Enzymatic Therapy, Now Foods, Doctor's Best, and Aubrey Organics. Go to VitaminLife.com.
The views expressed on this program are those of the hosts, guests, and callers, and are not necessarily those of KKNW, its management, or other advertisers. This program is sponsored by Dr. Pat Vasily and Transformation Talk Radio.
Hi, welcome. This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to the show. Tarot Priestess, using the cards to heal, grow, and serve with Lisa Robertson, who's joining me here today in a minute. But I'll tell you what, I want to thank you to our friends at Llewellyn. Thank you, Kate, Kat and Linda, for scheduling this for us. I don't know, Benny, probably you didn't see it. I don't think Jacob did last night either, but last night was the Critics' Choice Awards, because we are now in pop culture awards season, right? You know, we're now in that mode where a year's or so worth of accomplishment people are looking at, and the way that they do that in the guise of media and Hollywood is by giving out awards. And, you know, when I think about these things and you look at the people that are performing and you look at what they've done, you know, you could take a look at somebody like Jane Campion, and you can take a look at, you know, what is it, The Power of Dog, and you could see her award and her acknowledgement for that. And you think about, how do these folks rise up? You know, what is it about being in this modern day that will enable somebody like she, director, producer, screenwriter, just to rise up? Then you think of somebody like Halle Berry, who got award last night, and you think about her acceptance speech for that, you know, CME Award, you know, to see what she has done to raise a level of awareness for women. And then you listen to her speech, right? No notes in front of her, just Halle Berry, boom, 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 just out there speaking. And hopefully when it's all said and done, and you could pick whomever is in your circle. You know, for me growing up as a kid, it was just watching in awe people like Gloria Steinem, who was speaking all the time, but we didn't have social media then, and you had to actually hear her talk or be around her presence. But what have we learned from them? And what have we learned that will help us heal? And I can't help, when I think about some of these people, I think about what we're talking about today with Lisa. And that is, how do you become a modern-day priestess? Now, many people will say, I'm missing the boat, that there is a modern-day priestess. And, of course, we know that's Stevie Nicks. But how do you become that modern-day priestess? And so now we're going to have a great conversation. I've got a copy of the book in front of me. And, you know, this is where you step into a world and you watch what people are doing to help all of us recognize there's a level of consciousness we either have within us, can get to, haven't gotten to yet, but is available to us. We just need somebody like my special guest today hitting the switch on button for us. Lisa, it's great to have you. Welcome to the show.
Wow, that was quite the intro. I feel like the intro was better than me.
I wish I could say that's true. It is not true. You got more things going on. When I said to Linda this morning, hey, call Kat at Llewellyn, and Linda says, why? I said, Lisa's got like so many cool things going on. Which one are we talking about? Are we going to pull cards? What are we going to do today? It's exciting. But then I really am reflecting on the role of the high priestess or priestess in today's world. And I want to start with that before we dig into the book, and I have my copy right here. Brian, I couldn't agree with you more. We just need to be fired up by a whole world of high priestesses. What do you think?
Actually, I'm kind of jealous because I don't have a copy of the book.
I got a proof copy.
It's so funny to be on these interviews and see people waving the book around. I'm like, I don't have that yet. So let's backtrack a little bit about why I personally wrote the book, because in many respects, I wrote the book to take myself back on a journey of remembering.
Yeah.
And it was one of those journeys where I wasn't the same at the end of writing that book as I was when I started. And it really pulled me through the ringer, going through the different gateways of the major arcana, working with the specific goddesses inside of the temple. The actual writing of that book was a truly transformational spiritual journey for me. And I actually had to have the deadline changed on that book because it really was a deep journey. It wasn't just me sitting down to write a book. I felt sometimes it became like a diary of my personal experience moving through the cards and the teachings and the healing work. And when I'd finished with it, I really did have that thought of, that's kind of where we're all at.
Yeah.
We're looking for our own sacred journey, our own experiential healing that transforms and transmutes where we are to who we want to be at a soul level.
Yeah, I love that you said it that way, because that's one of the questions I was going to ask you. Because after reading the book, you know, I get a sense of a few things, right? But it's almost impossible just to read some of the language or some of what you've put in here, you know. And even there's a statement in the beginning where you say something like, you know, despite all efforts to really, you know, take the sacred feminine or take just feminine practices, right, sacred feminine practices, just annihilate them, just squash them down. Despite all of that, you get Halle Berry last night, right? And it's not just Halle Berry. It's what she said. It's this rising up, right? But it's hard to imagine writing this, every word, presenting what you're presenting, and not have been transformed by it. What would you say was your greatest transmutation characteristic?
It was definitely working with the goddess Danu. Like, I'm going to be totally honest. And she, like, pulled me through the ringer and out the other side. And there were moments where she actually stopped talking to me. And it was one of those things of, I'm on a deadline, I've got this book to write, you don't get to stop talking to me. And she's like, I will stop talking to you whenever I please.
Yeah, right?
You haven't learned the lesson. And until you get it, we're not going any further. And that was the experience I had while writing that book. Like, I was slapped down, beaten around. I was had my feet held to the fire. I was taken to task because they needed me to be at a very specific level and frequency in order to continue putting the information in the book.
Yeah, because I'm really struck by the fact that in this, and I'm looking at it, and almost as if I saw this Venn diagram of the path, the initiation, and the temple, and the language that goes, you know, along with that, but also when you start to talk about those things, those are not stale. They're not stagnant. They're not in place. It's not looking like looking at clip art, right? It's
right.
More like looking at three-dimensional animation, in a sense. And by the way, that's you. You are the three-dimensional animation in the journey of discovery, right?
Yes.
I often wonder for myself, and I want to ask you this question about the book and the messages, and the messages from the goddess. Is goddesses. But I often wonder, you know, what else is mine to do here? What else is mine to do to create a better world? What else is mine to do to dot, dot, dot? I ask myself that question every day. And I always say, Spirit, please tell me what is mine to do today. After reading the book, what I'm really struck by is how we can get that guidance from what you've created here. Can you talk to that or tell me I'm completely off?
You know, it is interesting because, you know, my wife and I had a similar conversation about this last night. She's very deep into spirituality, especially on a theoretical sense, whereas I'm more of an experiential person. Like, I take on a hypothesis and then I want to live through it, right? I want to get from one end to the other, which is pretty much why I write. They're my journey. They're my chronological spiritual experiences. Sometimes they work, sometimes they don't. And I think that one of the things that was really important about this book was how we actually set up our entire life as a devotional practice, as opposed to actually saying that spirituality is something separate from us, that we are the spiritual practice. And for me, that is always the biggest lesson and the biggest teaching of the goddess, is the reminder that we are the practice,
yeah.
That being here in this physical incarnation is the ceremony, is the ritual, is the pilgrimage, is the initiation, and we move through this spiral again and again and again.
I love that you said that, because I just finished an interview with Carrie Knudsen, and I ended the show, because we always were reflecting and we're talking about resilience, and I ended the show, she left with her personal message, and I left with mine, and mine was, you too can have a pet cockroach called the thing. You too can have that. And, you know, what did that mean? Because when I look back at my life, you're so right. Every element that I reflect upon now and think about, you know, the loss of my mom at an early, it doesn't matter what it is, shaped me and shaped me at a young age. And I used to ask, why? Why are you, why, I mean, why at age 20 do I have more things in my bucket than most people? I don't ask that question anymore. Because I had to get that. And you described this beautifully. I was just trying to figure out, like where. And thank you for telling us quadruple Sagittarians, thank you for telling us not to jump around in the book. But I also have four planets in Capricorn, so it's cool. But to follow the book, tell us about following the book. Because a lot of people are like, structure. But...
It's a weird phenomenon in nonfiction, right?
Yeah, tell me.
It's a weird phenomenon in nonfiction. Like, we don't jump around in fiction books. Like, we know there's a narrative story. We know there's characters. We get invested. We want to go on the journey, right? But in fiction, we're like, just give me the meat and potatoes, and I'll skip the substance, right? It's like, just give me the comfort food, and I'll move through the rest. And here's the thing. You can't really stop people from doing that in your books. But... this book in particular, at the very least, I would like, you know, I set up the structure to go through the temples at least from beginning to end. So, like, even if you didn't want to go through the entire book from beginning to end, at least pick one of them, whether it's the gateways or one of the temples. And I think that having the initiation and at the beginning, so having an opening ceremony and a closing ceremony for the temples is part of that. So, like, you get this whole thing of you're taking your own hero's journey or Shiro's journey at this particular point inside this temple that starts with an initiation and finishes with a closing and an ending. So there is a real journey here. There is a part to this journey to which you will traverse. Mm-hmm. And I guess for me, coming from an education background, like I know how long people's attention spans are. So I figure, like, they can probably stick to a chapter.
Yeah, but you know what? I'll tell you what, if you really do start at the beginning and, you know, we're introduced to, you know, we're introduced to certain aspects of ceremony, and I like that we can really pull from what we talk about. I love roses, rose petals. Honestly, not quite sure what the association is. I mean, if you knew that I grew up in the Bronx, New York, where I didn't even know anything about, I didn't even know there were roses till I think I was 21. You know, one of the things I love is now what I've learned about ceremony and ritual. It shifts energy. Can you talk about that for a minute? There's something about it that's more than just spreading out your medicine wheel because somebody tells you to do that.
Yeah, it's interesting because I'm just doing revisions on book number 8 right now. And again, we're talking about ritual and ceremony. And I was speaking in that book about how I'm always heavily influenced by my Celtic Roman heritage. And my ancestry on both sides is based on ritual and ceremony, but daily ritual and ceremony. And I feel like for most of us in the postmodern era, we have moved away from making a 24-hour space, small little rituals in which we traverse, as opposed to trying to get to-do lists done and be famous and make lots of money, right? So, like, I feel like there has been a shift away from where we actually get our energy from by being nurtured through natural daily devotional practice and having our energy literally sucked out of us by trying to attain ego status. So the daily ritual and the ceremony, and I really feel this is why so many people, when they get into it, feel like they've come home, because it's a natural state of being to slow down, be deliberate, have those moments of pause and reflection, and connect to something mm-hmm. that's a little bit bigger than you.
I love it. You know, I'm struck by like about five different things that I want to talk to you about. We're going to skip the break. For those of you just tuning in, I want to tell you Lisa Robertson's joining us here today. Before we just jump ahead, how do people find out about you? How do they get a copy of the book I have that you don't have? And how do they where do we send people to find out, like I did, all of the things you're doing, right, including your latest project, which is coming out, I think now it's May. But tell everybody where everything is.
I guess for publications, like the best place to go is actually Llewellyn. So if you want to see where that is, yeah. You can go to Llewellyn, or you can go to my personal website, which has pretty much most of the stuff on there, but Llewellyn's always going to have it up before I do. The other thing is just on social media. Like I'm on most social media platforms. You can just search through my name and you should be able to find me there. But yeah, for the books, always go, or the books and the decks always go to Llewellyn, because they've already always got stuff up way before I get it to my personal website, because they do the pre-orders and they do the teasers. And of course, you can't get the Tarot Priestess book yet because it's officially not launching till May.
And then right behind that, there's another release, isn't there?
December. December is another book, yes.
Yeah. Let's talk about the book. And I had said to you, this was my question to you, because I was talking to Linda this morning, and I said, okay, does the book come with cards? And this particular book doesn't, but that doesn't mean you don't have cards that go with it. I was struck by two things that I want you to comment on. And first of all, we're going to talk about the goddesses in a hot second. But what I loved about this was you introduce us to sacred altars, to altars, A-L, for a little New York there, I'm just going to, A-L-T-A-R, like an altar. And when people come in my house or even in my office, I mean, you can see that behind you right there,
mm-hmm.
right? That's an altar. That's an altar. I got one over there. There's this natural propensity for me to create these. And I had somebody say to me, well, what is that altar for? And I thought, maybe I should set an intention. But in the book, I loved how you're combining these altars, the cards with tarot. I didn't even think to do that. So when I'm going through here, I'm thinking, wait a minute, we got the cards. We are creating the altar. I can incorporate the goddesses into this. And that takes on a very specific and powerful blueprint, doesn't it? See, that's a different version. So now I'm going to go back, like in my house, and I'm going to modify them, right? But I didn't even think to do that. And I've been doing this 20 years.
Yeah, it's interesting. Altar work is so integral to everything that I do. And I guess for me, it's just normal to have cards on my altar because they're directing an energy. They're setting, they're creating the message. They're the communication and space holders for spirit between the physical and the vibrational. So I guess for me, I just don't know how to do them any differently.
Yeah, right. It'd be surprising to me since this is your area of expertise. But you do a beautiful job at laying out options for people that may not know where to begin. See, that's what I also loved about this. You know, clearly your body of work is in the expertise category. But the way you've designed the book and the way you wrote the book is you've created an opening from the very beginning, right? You've created an opening for people to explore, for people to experiment, you know, for people to learn about initiation and gateways by doing.
By doing.
By doing. And I love that because it is, it's not called a workbook. That's a strange term for something like this. But it really is a journey book that you can actually activate by doing things, right?
I would like to think so. I would like to think that's the ultimate reader goal from my perspective, for sure. Because, as I said, I am an experiential person. I believe in physically living the work. It's not theoretical to me. It is something that we inhabit and immerse and allow to change us, and we expand with it, we contract with it, it's pushed, it's pulled, it's everything. And it's interesting to me, people who want to make ceremony just a cerebral thing. And
Like you mean do it because you know you got to do it?
Yeah, like I followed it's the to-do list mentality, right? The cerebral practitioner is, I have the cards, I have the candle, I did the prayer, but there's no connection. Like there's nothing that actually binds the energy because they're not living through the experience, and the intuition and the emotional bodies aren't really part of the process. Whereas for me, it's an all-in type situation. And I kind of work on Gardner's theory of education, those eight principles of intelligence. And that is that the more we can expand into the different ways of learning and bring different information into our being, whether it's kinetic, whether it's auditory, whether it's visual, whether it's data, the better experience we have, and the more we can allow that which we call spirit into our real daily lives, as opposed to seeing it as something separate from our life, which to me it's not. Because if we are the prayer, if we are the ceremony, if we are the ritual, therefore we are also spirit. So it's one of these things of, I feel there is a shift for us to come back to the embodiment process, and the goddesses are a great place for us because that's what goddess religion really was all about. Patriarchal religion became theoretical and cerebral. Goddess religion has always been embodiment, immersive, transmutative, experiential.
You know, I really love that every page of this, there is something we can do to really rise our consciousness. I'm going to take a short break. When we come back, we're going to talk more about, well, the book is called Tarot Priestess. And then it's also using the cards to heal, grow, and serve. When we come back, we're going to talk with how the goddesses educated and enlightened Lisa, the author of the book, to prepare this in a way that we could not wiggle out of this. It doesn't matter what page you go to. You're not going to be able to wiggle out of it. And I'm going to read this, Benny, and then we'll go to break. This is just for you know, those of you out there, you don't have the book yet. But I was reading about Gateway 3, and I just want to read this as an example. It says, use your star, moon, and sun cards to craft a small prayer of thanks. So love and gratitude. But here it is. Dear goddess, come through the rubble of my past. I have claimed my wild self. The light of your star brought me back to the path. The moon watched over me as I traveled. Here I stand, arms wide open in the light of the sun with a grateful heart. Thank you, goddess, for teaching me. Thank you, goddess, for guiding me. Thank you, goddess, for bringing me back to light. And so it is. Let's take a short break, Benny. When we come back, more from the goddesses, the gateway, and healing. We'll be right back.
Fine. Juliana, who's got it? Have you heard about shifting the collective vibration and consciousness on the planet? Join me, Kimberly Barrett, on the Sharing Love and Light show every first and third Tuesday at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern at TransformationTalkRadio.com to explore the depth of vibration and consciousness on our planet and learn how you can shine your love and light. To learn more, visit SharingLoveAndLightShow.com.
Tune in to Knowledge Book Radio with host Marge Potasek the fourth Tuesday each month at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern on TransformationTalkRadio.com. Through many experiences, Marge was led to the Knowledge Book, a gift to humanity in its transition to the golden age that provides truth and answers. She now shares information from the Knowledge Book with you monthly on TransformationTalkRadio.com on Knowledge Book Radio. For more information, visit usa.theknowledgebook.com.
Hi, everyone. I'm Dr. Pat. I'm the host of the Dr. Pat Show, and I am the creator of the Transformation Network, doing what we do in the world of positive radio, informed, educated, positive media. Independent radio hosts and independent networks have been the face of positive messaging over the past decade. So all of us here have decided we're going to put together an independent network that is going to enable people to bring their positive message of hope, inspiration, and conscious action to the forefront. Help us create a future of amazing, uplifting stories that can be told so we can tell our children and they can tell their children of what hope and conscious action is all about. I want to thank you all for tuning us in, turning us on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Sometimes being human has its challenges. Our physical health falters, our spirits sag, our dreams don't immediately come to fruition. Welcome to the power of Maximum Medicine Radio. Join me, Doc Martin, in conversations that will blow your mind about healing. In our hit show, Doc Martin addresses the scientific with bridging to the mystical approaches to give you a new narrative about Maximum Medicine. In this live call-in show, we will journey into the extraordinary genius of the human body and talk about other beliefs that impact being your multidimensional self. We seek the seen and the unseen and explore the earthbound and the otherworldly, all with the purpose of calling forth the maximum you. To learn more about Doc Martin and Maximum Medicine, visit www.SharonMartinMD.com.
Everybody, welcome back. By the way, I just want to say one of the things we talked about with the book was, and Lisa was telling me this during the break, it doesn't matter, it doesn't matter what deck of cards you use. That's what I love about this. You use whatever you're called to use, and there you go, because it's applicable throughout the book, throughout every exercise. One more time, Llewellyn is the website they can go to, our friends at Llewellyn. You can do that and go there and take a look. And then you have other things coming out. And I want to make sure people know to go to your website. And it's L-E-E, those of you asked me to spell it, E-E-Z-A, Robertson Writes, W-R-I-T-E-S.com, publishings. You can find everything there. Everything I'm referring to, whether it's cards, whether it's books, whether it's what's coming, what's up and coming, whether it's the mermaid, tarot, whatever it is, it's all here. And then Llewellyn is its own site, L-L-E-W-E-L-L-Y-N. You'll be able to find it. The book is Tarot Priestess. Everything is there for you. Let's talk about the goddess. is, goddess is, goddess says. Tarot, goddesses, gateway, temples, right? Four suits, minor arcana, all of it. I can't imagine how you put all this together. You had to be being guided to do it. And I bet people are asking you, why these goddesses, right? I mean, that's like I was telling you during the break. Why did you pick those two goddesses to put on your wall? I don't even remember picking them. They picked me. But tell us about the process and how the goddesses work with Tarot. Or Tarot, however you say it.
Well, here's what's really interesting for me is my journey to the actual goddess herself was a difficult one. And that's another reason I wrote this book is in my 20s, I did not really associate with the goddess work or the goddess culture very much because everyone who was teaching it, in my perspective, was very straight, very hyper-feminine, and I didn't feel that the teachings were overly inclusive. As a woman who was becoming very aware of the fact that I was queer and didn't quite fit the mold because I was more intellectual, I wasn't interested in the same thing as other women, I felt very excluded from the goddess. I felt shut out. I felt like there wasn't a place for someone like me who didn't conform to this image of what a woman was meant to be. So I had a very disconnected relationship with a goddess probably right up until my late 30s, and I came across the work of Rachel Pollack. And Rachel Pollack blew my mind in so many ways. And her book, The Body of the Goddess, was really my goddess initiation, which is hilarious considering, like, you know, my academic training is in art history. And, you know, so I did all of the antiquities. I did all the goddesses. But my real initiation came from Rachel, and it came from that book. And after reading that book and connecting more to my heritage, because my heritage wasn't something that was taught in my home, we didn't really know a lot about the Roman side of my family, even though my mother was first generation Italian. My grandfather came over after the Second World War as a migrant. So there wasn't really a lot of understanding. There was a lot of very disjointed, disconnected pieces of information where I always felt like an outsider to what everyone else got to experience. So when I came to sit down to write a priestess book, it was so important to me that this be an inclusive book, that it, even though it was about feminine power and even though we were talking about goddesses, that anyone who either identified as a woman in one way or another or was non-binary or even identified as a man could come to these practices because we weren't talking about the goddess in a way of costume. We weren't talking about the goddess in a way of how we societally want women to be or look or show up or expect them to be. We were talking about the goddesses in their purest forms. So that was how my evolution of the goddess worked and how I wrote the teachings of this particular book. The four goddesses that ended up in the book, that's interesting because I try to come from my own cultural knowledge and not try and step on the toes of appropriation. Like there's something sleazy in my mind when we take other people's religions without a real deep understanding of them. And I have to tell you, like, I really wrestled with Saraswati for a long time about putting her in that book. She kept showing up, and she kept showing up, and she kept showing up, and she kept showing up. And in the end, I went down to the local temple down here, and I'm like, okay, so, like, this Hindu goddess, like, keeps popping up. She is determined to be in this book. I want to make sure I am doing it correctly and I'm not, infringing upon a religion to which I do not belong or a culture to which I do not belong. And my friend at the temple, who is Hindu, smacked me over the head and said, if Saraswati has shown up to you that many times, you write about her. And I'm like, okay.
Right. Exactly, right?
So she ended up getting in the book.
One of the things that this is what I was alluding to before, and that is, you know, some people want to know the why behind things, and I've gotten better at it and explaining things. Like if you come to my house, like this, do you see the back of my wall?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So some people will ask me about, like, a statue in the back, or they'll ask me about, like, what's on my wall. And I used to try to explain it, but the answer really is the way you just described. It is when an energy is coming towards you and is requesting of you, whether that is to grab that art piece and put it on your wall or to include this goddess, even though you're like, I never heard of that one before, what is that? Or if it's to put up Athena on my wall, and a very special version of Athena. I think Susan Boulay did this one, this version, you know, of Athena with the Medusa head, and, you know, people come in my house, and they're like, you're just weird. There's something wrong with you. But I used to try to explain it, and I realized that, and outside my bedroom door, is a fire red painting / poster of Madame Pelle. Now, there's some things that we just can't explain, but I can explain the energy of putting together, and I think that's what you're talking about, really, isn't it? You know, you are called to include this goddess, this one, put them together, this one goes here, this one goes with this card. But isn't it about the energy that that presents when you put them together? Maybe it's called synergy. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of synergy that happens with all the things that we do, to be perfectly honest, whether it's devotional practice or ceremony. I know for this particular book, I knew I wanted someone that was considered a light goddess, someone that was considered a dark goddess. So we had Lilith was the dark goddess with the fire there, and the light goddess were the priestesses of Avalon. And I knew that I needed someone who was very, very deeply rooted to my personal heritage. So that was Danu. And as I said, when I was sitting and saying that I needed these particular aspects, and I knew that we needed this balance and this harmony within the goddess, you know, representation of this book, it was just really hard not to have Saraswati there. Like, it was like, no, I'm going to be here. This is where I belong. This is where I balance out the content, balance out the knowledge, balance out the understanding, and it's going to be okay. And I was like, okay. So then that was my missing piece. But it did take me a long time to, like finally, you know, immerse her in the book. Like, I wrote about her separately, a different document, but hadn't quite put her in the book.
Yeah. I totally get it, though. I mean, you know, it's some of these things I think back on now, and I remember my earliest introduction. And I used to talk about the fact that I dialed the wrong number 20 years ago. That's why I'm here today talking with you, right? And I now know there are no wrong numbers. There are no mistakes. And I knew I needed to learn some things, and I am a student. That's who I am. I am a student. I get to learn from you, but I get to learn about myself. And what I remembered back was, well, wait a minute, Pat. You had exposure to these live priestess types when you were in your teens, and then in your 20s, you just forgot in rallies with women or festivals. Like, I think my corporate career wanted me to erase that, just saying. right? Like my executive corporate career that I had. But then you remember. And something about the remembering ignites something inside of us. Tell us about that, because I got the sense that that happened to you too.
Oh, absolutely. It's so interesting that you talk about, you know, going to a protest rally is an initiation. It's also a ceremony. I've been to many corporate, academic, and business conferences. They are massive, like, gateways. Each of these things brings us back to the spiritual self and to ritual over and over and over again. And you touched on something really earlier on in this interview, too, about how, you know, when you're in your 20s, you wouldn't have thought this. And I think for a lot of us, age does give us that lovely hindsight of being able to look back and go, oh, that was definitely a gateway point. Oh, that was an initiation point. That was definitely a death and finish point. So we have this wonderful perspective of our lives to see the journey of the spiritual self, as opposed to constantly beating ourselves up about mistakes. And for me, that's also part of the remembering. The remembering is that this was not a mistake. This was part of the ceremony. This was part of the ritual. This had to happen. This, you went through this pain for a reason. It may not make sense for 20, 30, or 40 years, but you will get to that point where you will see what this was really doing for you at the time. And I don't make claims like that lightly. Like, I am a domestic abuse survivor, so, like, I don't make those sort of claims flippantly or in, you know, toxic positivity. But there does come a point where you can look back on a traumatic event and see it for what it was in the chain of your life, as opposed to a specific horrible event that you beat yourself up for the next 20 years and go, how did I ever get into that situation? Mm. The goddess allows us that beautiful moment to remember that the soul is here for a journey. And if that's what the soul needed to feel and reconnect and come back to itself, then that's what it created. So it is one of these things where that remembering can happen in any place at any time with any group of people in any moment. Mm.
Yeah, I love that we're talking about this. And we are talking about the book because it is all part of the conversation. But it really is an initiation conversation of a sorts. When I read a book like this and I realize about reflecting upon the power of every one of these, whether it's, you know, Saraswati or the King of Swords or whatever it is that we're connecting the dots with, this is really, to me, why this book had to be written. This is the book that we need to put in the hands of people, because you're right. I mean, I joked about it on the last show with Carrie about having an incident on a plane, you know, driving from Seattle to the West, 6 hours, basically. And you're in a seat next to a person, right? And I remember, you know, he's asking me a bunch of questions, and I answered them and so forth. But it got to the question where he wanted to know more about my childhood. I don't remember the exact question. But it was more like, how does a person blah, 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 a positive talk radio network? And the answer I gave him was short. It was, well, my childhood wasn't great, but I think it's great now when I look back. I think I learned, and I said to him basically, if I didn't have this perspective on my first 19 years of life, I think I'd pretty much be dead now. And he just looked at me, and I went on to say really quickly, I mean, think about it. I grew up a little bit different right out of the womb. Now we talk about spectrum, and we talk about, I cried for 4 years, literally screamed. Uncles gave me boxing gloves at age 5, Catholic boarding school at age 6, got thrown out of Catholic boarding school at age 7, was beat every night there, homeless at 17, of course, in Catholic boarding school, mom dies, you know, commits suicide, homeless at 17, 19 arrested for something I didn't do. And I said, you know, I wouldn't trade any of that, because I think the universe got me and compressed it so that I could do some good, you know what, in life. And it was so hard for him to hear that. It's like, how could you talk about these traumatic things? But you see, you just summarized it. And I think that if we could take what you have in the book and really use it for healing, then what we can do is not desensitize those things, but demystify them, right?
Yeah. I think people confuse what healing is these days because everyone's a healer and everyone's got a healing modality and everyone's healing something, right? But
yeah, I don't. Just saying. I don't.
And I think we do confuse what we talk about when we talk about healing, but there's always going to be a part of us that comes up for a healing. It's not that there's anything wrong with it. It's just that it's ready to have a conversation with us. It's ready to get to a deeper relationship with us, because when we transform our relationship, we take the charge out of them. And I always tell people what we're looking for in healing is not to forget, not to erase, not to delete, but to get rid of the charge, the thing that amps up the central nervous system, the thing that burns out the adrenals. That's what healing is. And we know when we've got to that point because we can talk about it and we can be of real service and assistance when we have got to that point. And it might take 20 years, it might take 30 years, it might take 50 years, it might take your whole life and you don't get to do it this time around. Maybe that wasn't your journey, then that's okay. And what I love about the working with the temples here too is we have the opportunity to decide which part of the self is up for this particular healing within this temple right here, right now. And what was interesting is when I was writing the book, I thought I knew what those parts were until I got into the work. I was wrong, but that's okay.
Well, you know, it's interesting. I've just briefly touched the surface in the book, right? But I discovered something in here and just starting the process or some of the process. And I'm curious about what you discovered, because I didn't really get far into it, and then this thing crawled out from under the rock. Something I thought I had been so done with, right? You know, something I had thought, well, if I'm done with it, why do I keep thinking about it? You know, why does that thing keep coming up? How much of my father's legacy is going to come up for me? And, you know, what I love about it is you give us the opportunity to really look at it and face it, right? But there are many things. And I think you being you, me being me, the journeys that we're on, and I so appreciate what you're doing here, because the depth of this, especially for women, for the feminine, you know, sacred feminine, it is now time to go to this depth. It's really the time to go to this depth, not because it's a thing to do, but because there's a pathway to freedom. You know, there's a pathway that helps us be what we are truly being called to be. Do you see what I mean by that?
Absolutely. I absolutely love that you said that it is through depth that we find freedom, because social media is teaching us the complete opposite. Right? Social media is stay on the surface, make it all look good, you'll be fine. And we know that that's not true. We know that that is a classic case for burnout, anxiety, stress, panic attacks, all of those things that we have seen on the rise. And the true path to freedom is to sink below the surface, acknowledge the fact that the water is murky, and then do the work to clear it up.
You're so right about that. You know, I don't spend a lot of time on social media, but because of the business I'm in and because of our network, I have to pay attention to some of it. And I literally cried when I saw a post this weekend. And I had to explain why I was crying, and I'm still trying to understand. When two people are having a dialogue on social media about whether or not this war that's going on over there, the Ukrainian-Russia thing, right? From that war is the rise in gas prices.
Right.
I'm like...
You might have missed something.
And the dialogue back and forth about, well, you're saying you would rather have lower gas prices and go ahead and kill people, and I'm thinking, wow, have we become this, folks? It can't be the world. It can't be. I'm naive. I know I'm naive. I know I am.
I don't think it is the state of the entire world. And as I said, my wife is very, very sensitive. Like, she is a very much a heart chakra person, and she feels everything. And she does get caught up in the emotions and the pain of situations like this. And sometimes she will crawl into bed at the end of the day and feel really, really hopeless. Right? She'll have that sense of hopelessness because of what you just said. Is this really where we are? Is this humanity? And I have to remind her, no, that's just the polarized version that is the loudest. That's not where the work is happening. There are plenty of people doing the work, cleaning themselves up, staying in that attunement, following the soul, and putting really good positive energy into the world.
And you know what I love about what you just said, and I can't wait to meet your wife, really. You know, you and I come from struggles of identity, which we busted through that curtain. We don't have to think about that anymore. You know, whether you identify as queer, LGBTQ, and it's okay if you don't know the rest of the letters. It shows a modicum of respect that you know that there are letters. Hello, right? I'm ready to get rid of political correct conversations that really bring us at the table. That's what I'm willing to do. Now, I will say there are things you can say and things like you should really look up whether you can say them. But this is where, through your work, this has got to be heart-opening action. Back in the day, it was enough to be the heart-opening. Back in the day, it was enough to be action. We got to put them together so that we can start with ourselves and become acutely aware of what is ours to do. I got to thank you for all of this. I know the hour has gone quickly. I know folks will get the book when it comes out, but I love the approach you've taken to bringing sacred, spiritual, goddess action to a point where we can learn in-depth discovery of who we are, but yet who we can become. That's what I think is the blessing of what you're doing, and I really appreciate you for doing it. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you. Thank you for having me on the show.
Again, tell people how they get to, tell them when they get the book.
But
they can be pre-ordered.
Fingers crossed, May. The pre-order should already be on Llewellyn's website.
Yes,
so go there or look at Book Depository. They probably have pre-orders up as well. Those are going to be your best for the actual book right now because it is not actually in the marketplace.
Uh-huh. And by the way, if you do get the book, I want to reiterate, you know, this isn't, you can use whatever deck you have to go through this. Leave a personal message. What do you want to leave us with?
Personal message. Don't resist the call of the goddess because she's going to come slap you upside your face. So you might as well meet her where she is and move on.
Views expressed on this program are...